Welcome to the Waffle Shop podcast with me, Taylor James. This is the podcast that gets people waffling about their mental health, coping mechanisms, life's minor inconveniences, and the music that soundtracks it all. So join me as I open up shop and have a waffle.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Waffle Shop podcast. Today, I'm joined by the newly announced Director of Recovery for Against the Odds, Connor Martin. He is also the co-host of Against the Pods, which is a brand new podcast that aims to raise awareness around the dangers of gambling and the ripple effect it can have on your mental and physical health. This episode comes with a bit of a trigger warning, so if you are affected by anything that is discussed in today's episode, then please reach out for help. Let's get on with it. Connor Martin.
Cheers, mate. Thank you for the nice introduction.
Welcome to the Waffle Shop.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Honoured, man. I've obviously seen some of your stuff, and when you asked me to be on, I was a bit taken back. So, thank you.
You're kind of like part of the furniture now.
Yeah, I've been here a few times. Hopefully, I'm looking a bit more natural on camera.
Yeah. To be fair, this whole podcast thing, and as you guys will like find out, no doubt, like in a matter of weeks, when yours launches, it just makes you part of something. Like, there's a real nice community element of it.
Yeah.
It's completely, well, we're sat in the product of that. So it's honestly, I'm really excited for you.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thank you.
Obviously, I've heard the first episode, and the rest of the series is anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm very, very excited for you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And obviously, thank you for all the work you're putting in behind the scenes. And I mean, obviously, none of this would be possible without you. So thank you.
Thank you for that. It is a lot of hard work. But no, it's a pleasure to be a part of. This is all very nicey-nicey. But I do start each one of my shows with something called the Weekly Waffle, where it's a chance for me to have a moan and get things off my chest. I've got a book that I keep that is essentially everything that's ever pissed me off, I write in the book, and I slowly kind of work through them.
How big's the book?
Quite a big book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very big book. Like 30 years strong, this book. God. Yeah. First time I got qualified to go on pen in primary school, I was like, okay, this is it. This is where it starts. But yeah, hopefully then once I've spoken about it, it makes me feel better. But this one in particular has been in my book for quite a while. And I've kind of waited to kind of get it off my chest.
Yeah.
And I thought you were coming on the show and I feel like you might relate to this. Sorry that this is like really kind of like almost triggering for you. But I think you said it in like an episode, and to be fair, you actually said it just before we hit the record button, hence why I told you to show up.
Yeah, yeah.
In the nicest way possible.
Yeah, of course. Obviously.
But what's really pissed me off this week is being judged on a past version of yourself. And it's quite timely because I've had a lot of change recently from a personal point of view, from a professional point of view. And I feel like there's been a lot of like almost negative comments, or when you start to do better, it comes with almost like a negative kind of feel. And I kind of wanted to run it past you because obviously with your journey, has it pissed you off as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's so frustrating to be judged on your past self when you've put in so much work to change.
Yeah.
But I think probably in my situation, I was genuinely an idiot when I was kind of back in the day. So yeah. People might have a reason, but I've got a fear of being judged every single day. Like,
really?
It stops me from doing so much stuff, like setting up the recovery side of things, and that I need to be more active on social media, but I don't post because I'm so scared of being judged by people that I don't know. Old friends I used to speak with.
Yeah.
It just puts me off massively. It's like a mental block there.
I know. I thank you for sharing that, but I think that makes you the perfect person to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do something about it, you can always sit in that and always think like the what if. You just don't want to get to a stage where you wish you did.
Yeah.
Like you'd rather do something 100%. Like, yeah, and then regret it rather than not do it. But it's kind of really annoyed me because I'm just like, you know, we've all been an idiot. Like at some stage of our life, someone has been an idiot, or, you know, we've made mistakes, like we're a bit childish. But it's the whole point of life, isn't it? Is to grow, it's to change, it's to learn. And I just think like if you're constantly being judged on a certain version of yourself, it can become really limiting, and it almost shrinks you back down to a version of you that essentially doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
It's just really frustrating recently.
Definitely, mate, because as long as you learn from from your lessons of the past and you're trying to move on for it, and even like the little comments or what you think people are thinking about you, like you start to doubt yourself, like, am I actually like that? Is that truth? Yeah. And there's no truth in it. And some people, I guess, especially in your situation, some people just don't want to see you succeed. Like,
It's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's, like, it's really sad mentality to have, because you clap when people win.
Yeah.
And I just feel like if everyone else was a bit more like that, then we would probably see a lot more people winning.
100%. And it takes like big kahunas to come on here, put you out, do what you're doing. And I bet the people who are dishing out or whatever, I bet if they come on, I bet they would like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah. I don't know. I can't quite put a finger on it, but at the same time, like, I don't particularly want to understand it, but I also can't let it distract me.
Yeah.
So I feel like, now I've ranted about it, I feel a bit better.
Good. I'm glad.
Is there anything you want to get off your chest today?
I have to narrow mine down, to be fair.
Just don't say slow walkers.
Nah, not slow walkers.
I'm getting sick of people coming on here and saying slow walkers.
Probably going to be like... probably quite a common one, but people who can't park within the parking bays, like when they park over the line, I get it. It's so frequent at my gym, and I like it winds me up because I can't control other people. That's like one of the things in addiction, you can't control places or people. So I try not to put my energy towards it, but I see that and I'm just like, how can you be so inconsiderate and rude? And then in my head, I'm like, let's wait for them to come back and put me in the boot. But obviously, I'm
off the road, incorrectly parked car.
Yeah, but no. It's just, I think I've come a long way myself, so I'm very considerate of other people now. And how you can just park and even get out and look at it and be like, oh yeah, I'm about a foot over, that'll be sound.
Yeah, I might just be so excited to get into the gym though.
I doubt it, mate. There's another one at my gym again. There's a few consistent offenders who park in the disabled bay outside the front.
Ah, okay.
And they don't have a blue badge. You know, I know all disabilities aren't visible, but all blue badges are.
Yeah.
So if you've got one, put it on. And it's like, you're going to the gym anyway. Walk the extra 30 yards. There's so many spaces.
If anything, it's better for you to park further away.
100%, mate. But it really frustrates me because sometimes it throws me off my day. I'm just like, how can you be such an idiot to do that?
Man. Do you know what, though? This is the whole purpose of it. And when I was explaining it to you, some people don't quite get it when I say, like, this is the point of the weekly waffle. Because stuff like that, when you have, you know, you have struggled with, like, your mental health, or you're not as open with the things that do bother you or cause you those gripes, or it plays on your mind, if you don't capture it at that moment, you know... like
eats you up.
It eats you up. It has this snowball effect. So it is good to moan about these types of things.
100%, mate. Try and moan about it, put it to bed. My issue is that I'll moan about it and then I'll go out the next day and I'll see it again. And I'm just like, I'm back there.
You're part of the brilliant Against the Odds. And if for anyone who isn't aware of the work that you and Aaron do, I'll link everything in because I've never known anything like it. I think the impact that you guys are making already, and you're still very early on in the journey, is phenomenal. So the fact that we're kind of like a part of this, like a very small part of the journey, I'm almost in awe of what you guys are creating already. I want to dive back though, because I'm very intrigued to see how you got to the point that you're at now. And I know through Against the Pods, obviously you've kind of dived into it almost at a surface level. I want to kind of pick your brain a little bit today to kind of tell the story of how you got to where you are now, because it's almost the pain to purpose.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And anyone who is doing that is, I have so much respect for. It's how this started. It's how we're sat in a product of pushing past that. So yeah, I'm going to kind of hand it over to you if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Where do you want me to start from? Like,
should we go from the beginning? Like, because obviously you talk about like the addiction part of things. Like, when did you know that you had a problem? And like, what was the problem?
So the problem was cocaine, but I don't know if that was the problem or if that was the thing. That's probably the thing taking me away from the problem, which led to my addiction. I had loads of, not loads of childhood trauma, but obviously it's my story, it's my trauma. People might hear it and think, oh, is that it? But for me, my dad, like, I would never badmouth him because I want him to be happy. I want him to move past whatever he's done and just get on with it. But he was just never very, he just wasn't very present or anything like that. There was no, my memories of him are just pretty much just him sat on the sofa reading the newspaper and me kind of almost like pleading for attention and stuff like that. So, and after like years of therapy, that's where a lot of my, they figured out that's a lot of my self-worth and my self-doubt comes from, because not never feeling good enough. Like, if you don't feel good enough for your dad, it can kind of mess with you.
Well, so if, like, it's a pivotal figure, isn't it, in your life? That is your first kind of like male role model. And if you are, I mean, it's not nice to be ignored in any capacity, but if you've got that one person that you are looking up to and you aren't getting that back, you are naturally going to pull yourself away, retreat, and almost get that kind of validation from other areas. So it's completely, I relate to that a lot from my personal point of view. So I think it's a lot more normal than I think a lot of people actually think.
Yeah, and I think, I remember, like, instead of ever dealing with issues, even from a young age, like when my mum told me that her and my dad were splitting up, the first thing that came to my head was, can I go run a video game? And that was instead of, I guess that was, probably most people do it, instead of dealing with it, just go get something that's going to make you feel happy again, which is understandable, but obviously led me down a different path. And then like 4 years later, I moved in with my dad. I was there for about 3 years, but he was never there again, so it led to a lot of parties. It's where everyone would come to around the house, lots of drinking. We treated it like a dump, to be fair, and that was really disrespectful of us, but we were young teenagers, we didn't really know any better, and it was a free house every weekend, so.
Which is, growing up, like, you went to whoever had the free house.
Yeah.
So you're almost like, if you were facilitating the culture at the time.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you almost become a product of your environment, which can sometimes sound like a negative, but you do.
Yeah.
So again, it's normal.
Yeah.
It sounds like a therapy session, but like I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah.
Just everything that you've said so far, I'm like, okay, I get it.
And then I think we're living with my dad for about 3 years. He just come home one day and was like, I've got a new girlfriend, I need you to move out. And I was like 15, 14 at the time. And to me, that was like, okay, I'm not your son then, I'm just a lodger or something. I'm just like someone you found on rent a room. So then I moved back in with my mum. Also, just quickly, like, my mum's done so much for me since all this. When like the mum and dad broke up, gets me emotional thinking about it.
Yeah,
single mum of four, and she went to uni, got a degree and stuff, and started as a dinner lady. She's a head teacher now, so like she's smashing it, man.
Wow.
My absolute rock, to be fair.
Yeah.
So then
what a woman.
Yeah, I know, mate. Top woman. And I wish her all the happiness in the world, and our relationship's never been better. So then I moved back in with my mum after my dad said that. Rugby was pretty much my thing, everything that I escaped from. It was rugby. And I think about, I used to have a bit of weed and stuff, but nothing crazy, because I was so focused on rugby and I thought, this is it. But I was only playing at like Warwickshire 11 and stuff like that. I was nothing amazing, but
But it was an outlet.
Yeah, it was an outlet. It made me feel good. It was training Tuesday, Thursday, and every day in between, I'd be focusing on when am I next playing rugby. And I think it was, I think like 17 maybe. No, about 18, 19 was the first time that I tried cocaine. In between this, I'd left college. Sorry, I'll go back. About 16, obviously, when you leave school. Never knew what I wanted to do. Went to college, started as a bricklayer,
yeah.
Dropped out, then went to a different college, did like sports science, dropped out, worked with my friend's brother's business for a few years. But just like never knowing what I wanted to do, never being happy because I didn't have a passion.
Yeah.
All my friends seemed to be doing really well. They seemed to have just the same job, but I had gone from like job to job, like 6 months here, 6 months there. And I just didn't have no self-worth because I could see my friends had a direction. They knew where they were going. I didn't. And then I tried cocaine at our friend's wedding, and it was just like, hard to describe it, like nothing else in that moment mattered, just that buzz. Like a weird way to say it, it felt like liquid gold going through your veins. You just like, the hit was just like, oh my God, like I was really drunk, and then I had that and I was really sober. And I was like, hold on, taking this is going to allow me to drink more. So it just repeated that. My friends were able to stop, obviously. After weekends and stuff like that, but so it went on using for weekends till about kind of 22, 23. I had a girlfriend, really, really good girl, but she had a head screen on. She didn't know anything about it, and then, you know, rightly so, she came to her senses and went like, "This is not working." Like, she wants to go traveling and stuff like that, and I didn't have any money because I was constantly spending it on drugs or I was in debt, and that kind of took me back loads again, to the point like I was in bed for like 2 months straight, just using drugs. Wow. Went from job to job, just constantly going from job to job, mate, and just never realizing that drugs was the issue. Just thinking like this is okay to do. This is the norm. It just got like really out of hand. Then I got a job opportunity in Malta, so I went to Malta.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Malta was wicked. Malta was really good, and I thought, this is it now, fresh start. Obviously, not knowing much about addiction then, I thought, just move away from the place and it'll all be fine.
Yeah.
It took me about 4 weeks out there to find a dealer, and lost that job. It all, like, I was doing really well for a few months and then lost that job. Ended up having to come home, moving in with my nan. And I didn't really do much at my nan's because I didn't ever want to bring it into my nan's house.
Yeah.
I know I was a bad person, but had some morals. But that didn't soon last, and I was just spending every day in bed.
Why do you think you're a bad person?
I think I'm a bad person when I'm on drugs. I don't think I'm a bad person now.
Okay.
Because I've done the work, and I know what my limits are, I know what my boundaries are, I know what I can and can't do. But I think back then I was just... Drugs just made everything about me. Mm. It was me... Nothing else. I didn't care who I hurt. I just didn't care as long as I got my next hit of drugs. You know, it was just, everything was just revolved around drugs. Built up so much debt with loads of dealers, put my family in danger, essentially. Mum always bailing me out.
I want to dive into something because you said it about when like your mum and dad told you about like the divorce. You said like your reaction was, can I go and get a video game?
Yeah.
I'm not a therapist in the slightest, but is there a bit of a pattern there that when something gets a little bit tough, you go to almost like that instant dopamine hit?
100%, mate, that's exactly it.
As an adult, obviously growing up, obviously it's video games and whatever, like sweets.
Yeah.
When you're an adult, it is going to be...
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. There's no one telling you that's you can't do that.
Yeah.
Because you're an adult. No one can tell me what to do. Is that safe to say it was almost a bit of an ongoing pattern from childhood into adulthood?
100%. Anytime anything bad happened, lose a job, anything like that, it would be, what can I do to make me forget about what's going on and just put my head in a good space for... however long it lasts, 2-3 hours or whatever it would be. Even now that I'm clean and I still have, if I have bad days, like I find myself either looking to buy new trainers and stuff like that. And I'm like, hold on, I don't need to do that. Yeah. This is just me doing something to make me feel good. And my therapist pulled me up on that. And I was like, nah, I just like just like trainers. And he was like, no, you're doing the same things, but not with the substance. Yeah. I was like, yeah, he was right, to be fair. And mate, you just, when you're doing it all, you just constant lies. Like I've had a good friend at the time who got me a job. And I'd been up all night, obviously using drugs, and I hadn't slept. So I phoned in and I pretended that one of my family members had passed away.
Wow.
And they hadn't. And that's just like, I just thought that that was okay.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's just the madness of it all, to be able to pretend that and then think, okay, cool, I've got a few days off now.
Yeah.
And it's just, you don't understand the impacts of it all. And for people to hear that, they probably think that's absolutely disgusting. And it is disgusting. I hated who I was. I looked in the mirror and I hated who I was. My headspace was in such a bad place. I was like, towards the end of it, I was weighing in at like 12 stone.
Yeah.
And those for listening, I'm like 14 and a half now, which is like a good weight. And it's just,
I'm glad you're using past tense though.
Yeah.
You was.
Yeah, well, I've got to, because if I still believe that, I'm not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and the hardest part, you've got to forgive yourself for all the things, even if the people you've messed up haven't forgiven you, you have to forgive yourself, because otherwise you can't move past it. As long as you've tried to make amends or you've said your piece, and as long as doing that isn't going to harm them any further, you know, you've got to make peace with what you've done, because if you don't make peace with what you've done, you're just going to constant cycle of beating yourself up.
And it's, you're just going to drive yourself insane.
Yeah, mate.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you actually said it in episode one of Against the Pods, and it was about the lies. I wanted to ask you about that, because you, in the episode that you did, it was all about like the little white lies. You've kind of gone for the jugular there, like our family member has passed away. From a day-to-day point of view, was that like weaving in?
100%. It would start off with lying where I was to people, telling people like I had no money, to get them to send me money so I could borrow off them.
Yeah.
Like, and obviously, apologies to all them people. I've tried to make amends there, but I have to accept whatever happens. So lies about money, lies about people asking me if I'm okay, lying about that. Like, yeah, I haven't been using for a while. A big part of my addiction, mate, I was pretty much living a double life. I don't want to skip too far ahead, but like from the ages of like, so I'm 32 now, from the ages of like 27, 28, completely out of the blue to me. Was that I realised that I was attracted to guys and girls. No one actually knows this, only Aaron.
Oh, wow.
Only Aaron and another friend, and my mum, obviously, my family. Wow. None of my other friends know this. So.
Mate.
Yeah, cheers. But I don't want it to be like a big thing, but like it was just.
It doesn't have to be a big
thing. Yeah, no, because that's just not me. But I realised that I was, and cocaine took them feelings away, and I didn't want them feelings. I didn't want to be attracted to guys. I didn't want to not be normal, or whatever's classed as normal. I felt so much shame and embarrassment and guilt, and I just thought like it led me to such a terrible place. And I didn't tell any of my friends because I was worried about being judged. Like I'm a rugby lad, and I hate the term lad, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
And it just completely, like, you know, if it takes any other, my friends by surprise, it took me by surprise massively. And I did everything I could to kind of bury that and to dig that deep.
Mate, I massively respect you for that. You've seen some, like, the conversations I've been having recently. It's took me to get to this point as well, to be fully okay with it. And it wasn't a case of me, like, hiding anything. I just generally shut it off.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, well, I just don't want anyone to know any aspect of like sexuality or sex life. It's no one else's business. Yeah. It's mine. Whereas anyone ever challenged that, I'd get like a little bit defensive.
Yeah.
And it's only been through like recently and like the podcast that I've actually like, do you know what? Fuck that. Cause like, it's a huge part of who I am.
Yeah.
And you know, I used to be so petrified of talking about my mental health that it led me down a very dark path.
Yeah.
And then it's almost flipped on its head that I was almost then so scared to talk about every other aspect of my life. It was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So I was just like, well, something needs to change. And that's a huge part of who you are. Like, you shouldn't be hiding it away at all. And when I first said it out loud, the first person I ever really told was like my younger sister. And she was like, I don't care. I was like, yeah. Oh. And then when I started like to kind of like tell my friends, and everyone was like, no one cares. Which is great, but at the same time, like internally, that's not what's going on. It's a difficult thing to navigate.
And do you think it goes back to the point at the start about the fear of judgment?
It's the fear of judgment. I grew up raised by a football hooligan. My dad's in, I don't know if the Legion still exists, but that kind of mentality. And even this weekend, about the why I said my weekly waffle is about like being judged and stuff, the past version. I've never experienced homophobia. I've never experienced any kind of judgment in terms of character or anything like that. This past weekend, for some bizarre reason, my brother and my dad were out doing God knows what, and I got abuse this weekend.
Did you?
About this kind of stuff, using language that my friendship group have never used, the people in my circle have never used, and it took me by surprise. Yeah. I was like, why am I being judged? Like, I'm generally progressing, like I'm growing, I'm learning, like I'm doing okay.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm doing okay. Like, to be able to stand here and be like, I'm doing okay. I never thought I'd get to that point. And then to be judged by my family, it's...
Yeah.
But then...
That's really hard.
That's on them. I can't change that.
And it's really hard because you hope that they're the closest, but I've come to understand that. For me, family is just a word. It's how people act and what they do. I've got friends who are more like family than some of my actual family. Family to me is just a word. I've got some great family members, but there's also some really bad ones.
Yeah.
And it's just a word, and I've been able to put in them boundaries and separate myself from that. And a lot of people who I'm not aligned with anymore, or I can't do the things that they do, the drama.
Yeah.
I just can't be around it. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting this to go this way. Actually ever going to tell anyone what happened at the weekend.
I'm glad
I was
you
just
did.
Like, it's too... So, yeah.
I'm glad you did, mate.
I feel a bit lighter. That should have been my weekly waffle, rather than beating around the bush. No, I massively respect you for that, mate, and really appreciate you, like, talking to me about it. You said boundaries and, like, friendship groups there, like, having to step away. Was it difficult to step away from that when things started to change?
What, when I got clean?
Yeah.
I think I got to the point where I was using at the end. I was so isolated. I wasn't even talking to Aaron. Like, I hadn't spoken to Aaron for quite a while. But I was so isolated. I was just using by myself in my bedroom, going out probably once a month. Obviously, I had really good friends. But once I got out of rehab, learned about my addiction, learned about the things I could and couldn't do, and I'd seen the damage it had caused people of what I was doing, I just had to separate it. For me, like, I was very, very lucky to go to the rehab that I went to. And I never thought I'd be able to go. I knew in my head, like, I need a rehab, but I didn't think there's no chance I'm going to get one. No chance I'm going to get one. And with the whole leading a double life of hating kind of that I like lads as well as girls, not wanting anyone to know the addiction and stuff like that, I thought in my head that the best gift that I can give people is going to be to take my own life, which looking back is horrible. And I regret that because my mum found me. We had to go straight to hospital. But that's where it puts you. And once I've seen that damage and got sober and, you know, I realised it is what it is in regards to who I like. Mm-hmm. If people are going to waffle about me, let them. I've got no time for it.
Well, if they're waffling, mate, I'm coming from because it's my
time. Yeah. So I seen the damage and I thought, I just can't go back to that.
Yeah.
I can't go back to that. Like, I had a partner who was a lad. He's a lad, not was. He'd broke up with me because it was addiction just got so bad and stuff, but we're still really good friends. And my mum had to text him to say, just so you know, Connor's tried to take his own life. And We've been like really good since come out of rehab. Got back together, but then we've had periods where we haven't because they are in a really good place and they can go out and but they don't drink much, but they go out, they go on holiday, stuff like that. And because it was all new to me, I was getting very jealous. Mm-hmm. Had FOMO. I thought, I can't do these things. I don't think everything's aligning. So we took some time apart, but things are working really well at the minute. You know, he's seen me at my worst, and I hope that he gets to see me at my best.
He's coming.
Yeah.
He's coming.
I hope so. But to answer your question, it was really difficult to put boundaries in place. But once I'd seen the damage that I'd done, and to be fair, it wasn't that hard because not many people who I used to drink with and stuff, didn't reach out to me. I think once you go sober, once you start using drugs, I think you soon find out who your friends are. But that's not a dig at any of them because I know they've all got partners, kids and stuff like that. Life just gets busy. So I don't hold anything against them.
I think that's an important point to make because I think we've spoke about it on the show before and I've even spoken about it like in my friendship group. Like, it's not a dig at anyone.
No.
Like, in terms of everyone's on their own journey. If you get to a certain level and things don't quite serve you or, you know, they don't align with what you stand for anymore, like, it's more than okay to let go of that.
Yeah.
Because the more you stay in that environment or with people or a relationship, a job that doesn't quite fulfill you, the more damage it is going to do to you in the long run. Not to them, to you.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's more than okay to let go.
Definitely. And a good example of that is some of my friends would say, I'll just come to the pub, like, just have a water or lemon or lime, whatever. So I would do that and I'd believe and they'd be like, wow, then you've done well. But they don't see, or they didn't see at the start, what I was like after that, like driving home, like crying because I couldn't be involved, because I couldn't stay, because I knew what was going to happen for them that night. Yeah. Like, they were having a laugh.
Does that still exist now?
Not so much, no, because I've done a lot of work, but I know what certain events I can go to and what certain events I can't go to. Like, if someone will say, come to, like, my friend, I was part of the groom's party. I don't know if it's called the groom's party. I was part of that at his wedding. And I said to him, look, I can only stay as long as I can stay. And he was like, you shut up. Like, you leave when you need to leave. They're the people you need around you. Like, you can't be questioning you. Like, he was the first person I told, actually, about my sexuality. Yeah. And I said, look, I need to talk to you. And he, like, got up. He's like, what? And I was like, and I told him. And he was like, I thought you were going to tell me you got to bury your body or something. He was like, I don't care. Yeah. I was like, sound.
Oh, weightlifting. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it, though, how, like, much fear there is and kind of like,
mate,
saying it out loud.
Yeah,
like, it's also quite a powerful thing to say it out loud, but yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, like, I don't like make it about my personality or anything like that. It's just, I've done a lot of work in therapy because I genuinely hated the feelings and I hated who I was. Mm. But it is what it is. I've tried to change it. I've tried to take my own life because I didn't like it. So I've had to accept it. And, you know, it is what it is. And if anyone wishes me bad, you know,
can't control it.
That's their energy, not mine. So.
And it's, do you know what? It's actually really powerful thing, acceptance. Like, in every aspect of life and just being able to accept it, let things go and move forward. I think that is more admirable. You've mentioned there about the suicidal side of things.
Yeah.
One of my questions that I was going to ask you was there a rock bottom or a turning point for the journey to sobriety? Was that the kickstart, or was there more?
There was many rock bottoms in regards to, like, stealing, watching my mum take out money to pay off my drugs. But even when she was doing that, I would make up that the debt was bigger than what it was, so I could go to the dealer, pay the dealer, and then take more.
Yeah.
When I'd finish in bed about 4 a.m, using all my drugs, and it's just like crying every night for like 3 months. And there was like 3 months up until what happened that I would go to bed every night, like, genuinely wishing, like, please, please don't wake up tomorrow. Like, let tonight be the night. Which is really sad. And for anyone who's listening, if this resonates to them, like, just reach out, even if it's to me, if it's to friends, family, like, just reach out, because your friends would rather you cry on their shoulder than them cry at your funeral, you know? I heard that the other day and I was like, I've got to use that.
That in one of my video clips, by
was it? Was it?
Come on here and steal my show.
Is that off yours? Oh, brilliant.
Because it was one of the things my friend said to me. Because it was just like, because I have a tendency to go off, like, off ranting and stuff. And when things got bad, like, my sense of humour went, like, the only two people that I could talk to was my best friend and my sister. Like, I was just shut myself off. I was just like, but I can't keep ranting at you. Like, because the anger, like, I can deal with almost every other emotion, but when it comes to anger, yeah. I really struggle. I was like, I can't keep ranting to you. Like, it's not fair. You know, she was just giving birth. Not obviously, I wasn't ranting while she was giving birth. It wasn't that bad. Like, God,
calm down.
Yeah, I respect boundaries. But it was around the time, like, she was, like, obviously heavily pregnant. I was like, I can't keep ranting at you. And that's when she said to me, she was like, well, what's the alternative? You either rant to me now or, you know, and, like, through text messages, or I'm reading stuff out at your funeral. So you text me. And it was it was the biggest kick up the arse to be like, I'm okay to talk about this now, okay? Like, it was almost like the green light, like, okay, regardless of what it is. And they're the family that you choose.
Yeah, and I think for me of, like, so many years of having no self-worth and not feeling good enough, for me, having them, like, I wouldn't be where I am today without them people in recovery, having them friends near me, having my partner and having my mum, you know, my aunties and stuff like that, on my dad's side, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Without having them people that you can go to and talk to, and obviously I'm part of fellowships and stuff like that, other addicts, it's massive. And the thought of trying to do what I did, and it's just like, how do you get to that point?
Yeah.
And that took a lot. And I could see how much it affected my mum. And it was about 2 days after that we got me booked into a rehab. And I went into rehab on November 2nd, 2021.
Wow.
Yeah, been clean since, man. So
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play. Yeah. And to be fair, it's just, but this is what I mean as well. Like, this is why the work you're doing is so, like, powerful, because you've been there.
Yeah.
And there's something so heartwarming in going through something and the driving force being you just don't want other people to feel the same way that you did. And I think I get that from you. I got it from, like, day one that you walked into the studio. And knowing what I know now, I'm like, okay, I really get it now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What is next for yourself?
I am currently training to be a recovery coach professional with CCAR. They are an industry in Connecticut, actually. Not an industry, a business in Connecticut, out in the USA. But they're really, really good. I've got 3 certificates, ethics, professionalism, and spirituality already.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. The spirituality one was my hardest one, because I don't see myself as a spiritual person, but I think if everyone thinks of spirituality, think of burning incense and meditating and stuff like that, but it's not like that. It's just about doing activities that make you feel happy and that are putting your well-being first. So for me, like, spirituality is like gym, walks, meeting up with friends, stuff like that. It doesn't have to be about, because I think spirituality and religion, there's a lot of crossover almost. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people don't buy in. But I took these courses just to broaden my skills. And I'm hoping to be fully qualified by the end of June. And then we want to go live with Against the Odds Recovery.
Big year.
Yeah, want to grow that out, which comes back to me needing to post more so people can see what I'm doing and stuff. I think the end goal is probably to kind of, you know, in like 5-10 years, I don't really want to put a timescale on it because it could happen quick. But I'd love to have like a, almost like a, not so much a rehab, but like almost like a retreat place for people to come to, and like, even if they need to detox or well-being, you know, I want to get me more qualifications, potentially yoga, PT, stuff like that, so I can just do everything in-house and give back. Because the most important thing is I felt so alone when I was going through it all, so alone. I thought I was the only person, and evidently I didn't see a way out. And I want people to be able to reach out, and, you know, recovery is a devastating thing, but the mess, like, you just don't have to do it by yourself, you know?
Fucking hell. Felt like I was getting, like, a little bit emotional. This is being recorded, so from an accountability point of view, I'm going to clip this up and I'm going to send this to you on a monthly basis. Like you said this.
How's that retreat?
Where's the retreat? No, I think it's so powerful, like, what you're doing. I have nothing but respect, and I'm very, very excited to kind of watch this grow, because the amount of fire and the dedication that is there with yourself, like Aaron, against the odds, it's only going to get better, bigger and better. It's going to be a big year. I have three final questions that I ask each one of my guests.
Yeah.
I'm quite excited about this now, because I wasn't expecting any of this episode to go the way that it was. But if there was a movie about your life so far, what song would be playing as the credits rolled?
Well, the end credits?
Yeah.
Have you heard a song by Gavin DeGraw, I Don't Wanna Be? Have you heard it? That would probably be it, mate, yeah.
Are you a country music fan?
No, not really. I've got, for
sake, I was hoping someone
I just like what I like. The music I listen to is very much dependent on what mood I'm in or what I'm feeling at the time. That might sound weird, but like, yeah.
No, not
just,
at all.
Yeah, like for me, I like what I like.
Yeah.
If I get a good vibe off the music, or if it puts me in a good headspace, then I like it.
Yeah.
No,
I respect that. I respect that as well.
I didn't think you'd know the song, so I'm chuffed for that.
Mate, I think people just assume I ask these questions. I listen to music 90% of the day. That's why I get like really into this kind of stuff, because when you said there about, like, you know, you don't know why, it just speaks to you.
Yeah.
I have a weird thing with like lyrics and melodies and again, country music, for some reason, it seems to be able to say what I can't say. And that's why I resonate with these real kind of like powerful artists, like people like Amy Winehouse and like Adele, because they just seem to get it for me.
Yeah, that's wicked.
And yeah, Back to Black actually soundtracked my mum and dad's divorce.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean. I have a weird thing with music. Like it soundtracks like moments and memories for me. And it's like I have artists, like if I want like a bit of a, almost like a kind of, I guess, a hit of dopamine, Pitbull.
Yeah.
Like
Pitbull. No way, mate.
Don't do that.
I should have judged. Sorry. Yeah, I know what we spoke about. I love Pitbull.
No judgment zone. Instant good mood. To be fair, it leads me quite nicely into my next question is, what song gets you on the dance floor?
Probably some cheesy crowd like Love Shack.
Yeah.
Dancing Queen, something like that.
Bangers.
I like Dancing Queen, but there's a Boiler Room remix, which is and that's it's a bit heavy. That would have probably been old me chasing my jaw around the dance floor. but no, it's something like Love Shack or something.
Bangers. Absolutely bangers. Is there a song that you'd like to put in a box, wrap in chains, kick to the bottom of the ocean, never hear again?
Yeah, it's actually, because it's so overplayed by Aaron. He's a big fan of Cher Lloyd, Swagger Jagger. So, yeah.
You haven't just done that. Is he actually?
Authentic, you know what I mean? I've got to tell the truth.
Have you done that to Zach? You have, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
Do you know what? I'm editing that last bit out. That's staying in.
Yeah, I told him I was going to do it. So, and he was like, no, don't do that. But no, yeah.
You can't stop.
Yeah.
Swagger jagger. Oh, I'd love to see what his Spotify end of year
Who Aaron's?
Rap parties now.
It'll be nothing like that. I just know that Shadowed off X Factor or whatever.
Yeah. Don't pretend you don't know.
I know that he was a big fan of her. So.
Yeah. Respect it. Mate, this has been quite special, to be fair. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as what it was. Like, thank you for being so open and honest and like sharing your vulnerabilities. I think it's going to help a lot of people. Not obviously just this episode, but the work you're doing at the moment is insane. Like, in a good way. Mental. And I can't thank you enough.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Been an absolute pleasure, mate. And I'm honoured to have come on. Like, when you first asked me, my instant thought was, who's going to want to hear what I've got to say?
But me, because it's my show.
Yeah, I know. But that's the doubt and the judgment coming into my head. But I'm really glad that I did. It's been wicked. And if there is kind of anyone listening who is struggling or something like that, like, just reach out, because if you are looking to go clean sober, it is going to be the most challenging and hardest thing you've ever done, but it is going to be by far the best thing. And your new life is going to cost you your old life. You'll lose some friends, some relationships, but you'll keep the people around you that are meant to be with you. And I haven't looked back since. There's been hard days. I'm not going to say it's all rainbows and butterflies, but it's been the best thing I've ever done. And if there is anyone considering it or anything, please reach out, look for kind of what resources you can get, and go for it, man.
Where can people find you? If they've listened to this, they want to find out more, where can they find you?
Instagram at Connor with one N, Connor, underscore ATO. Yeah, just give me a follow, drop me a message. I haven't posted much. I've only recently come back on Instagram because I just felt like I was on there just watching people do everything I can't do. So I had to... went away, did some work on myself and focus on what I can do in my life now. And I thought, you know, last month was a good time to come back with everything going on. So hold me to account to start posting more.
Accountability is key. Yeah. This kind of stuff. No, mate, thank you for joining me.
No worries, mate. It's a pleasure.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the Waffle Shop podcast with me, Taylor James. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and even leave a review. It means the world to me. See you soon.